I'm good with them going either way as long as we're playing our butts off. Yeah.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to episode number... You put me on the spot. 678 of Locked On Raptors for the Wednesdays. Tuesday. God, I have no idea what day it is. Tuesday, March the 10th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of Raptors.com. You can find me on Twitter at Woodley Sean. Find the show at Locked On Raptors. We can find links to every single episode of the podcast. And of course, please make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network, as we have team-focused shows covering all 30 NBA teams, all 32 NFL teams, 30 of 31 MLB teams, or wait, there's 31 NHL teams. Yeah, that's what it is. 30 of 31 NHL, and there are 29 of 30 MLB teams, and we'll have those other ones covered soon, I'm sure. So please make sure you're subscribing, rating, reviewing. If you're a Toronto sports fan, make sure you're checking out Locked On Blue Jays with AJ Andrews, as well as Locked On Leafs with Mike DiStefano, to get the juice on those teams that are varying degrees of less fun than your Toronto Raptors. And the laugh you hear there on today's show is the first in-apartment guest of the podcast in a very long time. We used to have Will Liu come by my old house in Toronto once in a while, but since I moved to Hamilton, it's been a lonely road. So when he's in town, or when someone's in town, I have to rope them into coming to my house to make it seem like I have friends and company. Joining me on the show is from Raptors Republic, Louis Zatzman. What's going on, buddy?
Yo, let me tell you, dear listener, he moved to Hamilton for good reason. His apartment is absolutely off. Exposed brick, hardwood floors. He lives in the lap of luxury.
You're hearing the echoey stylings of the tall ceilings as well.
Ceilings.
So apologies if the audio is not awesome today, as we have to share a microphone, but that's okay. It's great to have you here, buddy, and thanks for coming by to talk about one of the best wins of the season for the Raptors, 101-92 over the fraud Utah Jazz last night in Utah, the final game of the road trip, moving to 4-1 on the road trip, moving to 46-18 on the season. Louis, we'll start it off the way we do all of these post-game shows. What was your biggest takeaway from the Raptors' punking of the Utah Jazz?
I don't know if this is my biggest takeaway. Well, the biggest takeaway, let's start with the big one. Serge Ibaka versus Rudy Gobert was... I don't know if I've seen a center outplay another center to that extent, ever.
Yeah.
And it's Ibaka outplaying, you know, a parent, an ostensible all-star in Rudy Gobert. That was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. It was... I mean, it can't be encouraging if you're a Jazz fan and you're thinking about the playoffs and some of the teams that the Raptors have to face. Like, Anthony Davis is basically a supercharged Serge Ibaka.
is he?
I mean,
Serge Ibaka light.
Yeah, exactly. He's a dollar store Serge Ibaka. Much less handsome, for sure.
Can't shoot threes.
No, he can't. But man, Serge Ibaka can. He was 5-7 from deep last night. They pulled Gobert away from the basket. When they didn't pull him away from the basket and Ibaka was under the basket, it didn't seem to matter.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I think in past matchups with the Jazz, as you would expect because of Rudy Gobert, the Raptors have, as most teams do, kind of been very aware of Gobert and have kind of, I think, maybe shied away a little bit from just being overly aggressive. I think we saw this against the Bucks as well, right? When you have, like, Brook Lopez there and you see the numbers that he has at the rim, you obviously are going to think about those things before you drive and make your forays into the paint. And it didn't seem like they were worried about that at all last night, and it ruled.
And when Portland was in Toronto, the same thing happened with Hassan Whiteside. I don't know how many blocks he got, but he changed the game defensively. I mean, Toronto has had a problem in the past with gigantic centers who can block anything you throw up there. You mentioned Brook Lopez. Anthony Davis did the same when they played LA. And yet, Rudy Gobert just did none of that.
Yeah.
He may as well have not been on the floor defensively. It was wild.
Yeah, I think a thing they really did well was they funneled the offense through Pascal quite a bit in the post. And doing so, like, they really spaced Serge really well, I thought. And, like, they would have Serge kind of hang out around the nail. Yeah. And then whenever Gobert would come down to double, instantly it was like going to Serge. And then they were either getting something easy out of it or it was Serge kicking out and they were swinging it around. And then obviously when he's standing out on the perimeter, you're never going to have Gobert go out there. And it seemed like the Jazz didn't really take advantage enough of the fact that Patrick McCaw played 42 minutes in this game or something like that. No, that was the night before, wasn't it?
No,
it was last night. He played 42 minutes last night. And it was like... why didn't you just stick Gobert on him, right? It just seemed like maybe that's too much of like a playoffy adjustment or something. Yeah, it just seemed like, why wouldn't they do that when Ibaka's stretching him out so much? They went zone a couple times, I think, throughout the game. But for the most part, they played it straight up, just like position by position, and it did not work at all.
I think what the reason why Toronto tore it apart, whether it was zone or man, was not only was Ibaka phenomenal, he shot 5 of 7 from deep. His pump and go game was amazing. He got everyone to... It's like Valanciunas pump fake.
Yeah.
Everyone bit. His driving was great. His passing was on point. He had a couple really sharp reads to the corner. But Siakam's passing from the post and on the drive, I think, really unlocked Ibaka. It gave him that extra half step to be able to get the defense moving. It got people rotating. He was dominant in the post. His counters against Royce O'Neal were just breathtaking. And so, you know, we talk about Ibaka dominating Gobert, but it's all interlocked, of course. And Siakam giving it up early and on time was a huge part in Ibaka being able to get advantageous, you know, positions.
I'm not sure if Podcast Network David Locke is listening. Podcast Network head honcho David Locke, that is listening. I'm not sure... I'm going to get fired for putting him on blast for something. But back when the Raptors played the Jazz the first time, you were there for the conversation we were having with David before the game in the hallway. That was the game the Raptors were up 40 at halftime against the Jazz and absolutely ran them out of the gym during their first sort of spell of not looking very good. The answer to the question who guards Pascal was very quick from David. He said Royce O'Neal.
He said very well. He'll guard him well.
Yeah, he's like, he's very strong. He will do it. And it has not worked out as such in the two games the Raptors have played against the Utah Jazz with O'Neal kind of being the main guard. I think they threw a little bit of Bojan Bogdanovic on him too, which it's never a good idea. And Siakam just like looks so comfortable, and like this is the thing, right? We kind of know the teams going in that Siakam's going to look really good against. This was a new level though. Yeah. Like as much as I thought Ibaka was incredible in this game, I thought like Siakam's playmaking was absurd. He was very close to a triple double. He threw one pass that like broke my heart when Patrick McCaw missed the three, and it just popped out too.
Yeah.
This like disgusting skip pass from the right wing all the way to the left corner. I don't think I've seen Siakam make that kind of pass before. I mean, he'll make some here and there, but like that one was like a standout. Like, oh, okay, this is like a thing now. And I really think the passing we've seen, and I made a note of this yesterday, like we've seen his assist numbers up a little bit lately, up to 5 or so in a lot of these games. He had 8 last night. And I think with the passing with him, this is like a direct, this is development on the fly. This is a direct byproduct of like the Raptors saying, okay, we're going to run our offense through Pascal more. We're going to force him into situations where maybe he's uncomfortable and we're going to make him deal with them. And a lot of the times recently it's been, you know, pretty wonky shooting lines and things like that. But we're also seeing him refine those counters and those playmaking abilities to sort of take advantage when teams are loading up on him. And I'm not saying it's always going to look like it did last night. The Jazz seemed particularly prone to it, and they've been really prone to Siakam carving them up. I think I wrote a piece after the first Jazz game about Siakam just like having a mastery of the post, and because the Jazz weren't very creative, they were sending the same guy, usually Gobert, from the middle, and it was just easy to pick apart.
Yeah.
And so maybe this is a team-specific thing, but I do think it kind of speaks to the idea of developing on the fly and the sort of like this season being fully successful in what it was supposed to be. It's learning what Pascal is, it's improving Pascal as a number one option. Will he be this in the playoffs? I'm not sure, but I don't know. What did you think of just like the way he carved up the Jazz last night?
So there's two sort of separate things. The post game is unbelievable. So when David Locke said that, he said Royce O'Neal is so strong, Siakam won't be able to move him, which is not the case. And to O'Neal's credit, he had, I think, 2 plays where he stood Pascal Siakam up strong.
Yeah, there's a stretch there where, like, yeah, it was a little bit tough, I think, at the start of the second half in particular.
I mean, when you try to turn yourself into a wall like that, you open yourself up to the spin. And Siakam hit a couple really nice fadeaways, deep position, you know, felt resistance, spun off of it for that little mid-range fadeaway, 8 to 10 feet. I think he hit 3 mid-range jumpers in the game. If he hits that, it's over.
But
the other thing is, when you try to play so strong and play on the spin, the actual just shoulder through a guy is a counter in itself,
right?
Because you're trying to move your weight left and right. And when you go straight through someone, that's when it falls apart. And Siakam did that a couple times. Got straight to the other side of the rim. His post game was like chess, you know. Mm-hmm. He just had so many openings, so many middle games, sacrifices. It was really masterful. And the passing is the other thing, I think, even more encouraging. You mentioned how good it was. He has developed passing out of the post to a great extent. He and Ibaka have showed really nice chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Passing on the move has been a little bit iffy for him.
Yeah.
He hasn't quite developed passing out of the pick and roll to the same extent, which is why that read you mentioned from the wing to McCaw in the corner was such a big development, because mm-hmm. those types of looks I haven't seen a ton of, and he had it all, you know, on lock. It was really impressive to see, and Toronto's dominance really did flow through him. And, you know, we haven't talked about Kyle yet.
Yeah.
Let's move to Kyle.
Yeah. So Kyle Lowry, I mean, what a road trip for him. What a season for him. It's been a delight to watch every single night. He goes for 21, 5, and 7 last night. Like, I think less of a sort of overwhelming dominant performance than, say, the Warriors game or the Kings game on Sunday. God, I forgot. But still, just like, and by the way, all of this is happening with Norm Powell leaving 2 minutes into the game, which we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah.
And it just adds to that, like, how bloody impressive this win was and how, like, inspirational it was that they were able to sort of overcome that. Just like, it has to be a gut punch to see a dude playing that well, get player of the week, and then go down 2 minutes into a game with what looks like a pretty bad injury. Although Mike Ganter said after the game that he left without a walking boot or crutches, which is good news, and they have 4 days off. So I don't know if he's playing on Saturday against the Pistons. Don't play him against the Pistons, because that's where all bad things to Norm happen. But, you know, hopefully it's not something that's going to keep him out long term, the way the shoulder has it a couple times this season. But
yeah, I just dropped my Norm as a superstar piece yesterday. I was going to hold it until tomorrow. Thank God I didn't release
yeah.
it. But I mean, you really feel for the guy. How many times can you come back from a long, you know, convalescence
yeah.
and just still be focused when you return? It's got to be draining.
Apparently, it's not a problem for him. He gets better every time. Like, before the Charlotte game last week, like the last game, the second last game before they left for the road trip, it was the last game where they lost, nearly making it to overtime. You know, I think before the game, Nurse said something along the lines of, every time he comes back, he's like another half level up.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know if he can get another half level this time. But
then he did.
He got like a full other level. Yeah. And I will not bet against Norm, you know, coming back from whatever this ankle keeps him out for with and kind of keeping up what he's been. Because, man, it's been so fun. But back to Kyle.
Yeah.
I don't know. What did you think of Kyle's game? It was just, it's a Kyle game. It's like an absolute Kyle game. His defense remains incredible. I think the way I've sort of reconciled the whole all defense thing with the Raptors, we'll get to OG Anunoby and his extracurriculars as well in a little bit. But like, I think OG probably deserves to be all defense on the team more than anybody else. But maybe because of the logjam at the forward positions, he's not going to get on. Kyle seems like maybe at the guard spot might be the most likely, and he kind of deserves it. He's been just ridiculous and just like ripping the ball away from dudes. He did it last night a couple times as well. And obviously like dictating the offense with three guys really comprising most of the offense last night. I don't know. I'm running out of things to say about Kyle Lowry. He's just incredible.
Yeah. You know, there's different types of dominance.
Yeah.
Some guys dominate by shooting 60% from the field and scoring 30, like mm-hmm. Norm.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Serge Ibaka. Kyle dominates, I mean, you say it after every game, between the edges. There was a play I noticed where there was a long shot and it bounced funny. And even though Ibaka was boxing out Rudy Gobert, Kyle recognized that the ball was going to go over Ibaka's head, and he pinched in, sort of double block Gobert,
mm-hmm.
got the rebound. It's those types of plays where he just recognizes it will be an offensive rebound unless he goes out of his way.
Yeah.
It's, you know, he finds ways to win that no other player can find.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about Ibaka's dominance. A lot of that also had to do with Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
Among the pick and roll artists, no one quite throws the low release bounce pass to the roller
mm-hmm.
where it only gets 1-2 feet off the floor at
mm-hmm.
its highest. He just rolls it basically down the floor through to Serge, puts spin on it so it goes fast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just has these maestro passes that very few, I mean, maybe James Harden used to do them when he had a goal. Not many players can do anything like that. He is an artist between the edges, and we should appreciate him as much as we can. I mean, he shot 7 for 18 from the floor. Didn't matter at all that
mm-hmm.
it was below 40%.
Yeah.
That step back three with under a minute left.
Oh, my God.
One of the shots of the season.
Yeah. It, right up there with that Pascal shot in that Kings game. Like, yeah. Same kind of, like, the shot making was just absurd. So this is a loaded question because there obviously have been a lot.
Love it.
But is this your favorite Kyle season? I feel like there might be better seasons, like, statistically. I think 2016-17, before he got hurt, he was one of the, you know, seven or eight best players in the league, probably. This season, I'm not sure you could say that. Maybe you could. I don't know. Like, I think it was Bill Simmons on his podcast with Zach Lowe was saying, like, Lowry should be, like, a top six MVP candidate just because of his, like... It was really nice hearing Bill Simmons just have, like, a Kyle Lowry love-in. I'm not going to lie. It was great. And I'm enjoying that this season Kyle's doing all this and actually getting the recognition for it. It rules. But, like, I don't know if I can think of a more fun Kyle season. It's been just, like, an absolute treat. And, like, I'm worried for his health. He's played 43 minutes, like, the last two games. And yeah. He's, like, throwing everything out there. And maybe this will come and catch up to them in the playoffs, in the finals. Hopefully it catches up in the finals. It'd be great. You know, he's played a lot of basketball. I'm not sure, like, how long it's sustainable. But what he's done, man, I'm so in love with Kyle Lowry and everything about watching him play.
I think it has to be the most fun Kyle season, but in that the rising tide lifts all boats, it's the most fun Raptors season.
Yeah.
You know, there are six or seven players having their best seasons of all time as a Raptor this year, and Lowry's not one of them. Mm-hmm. If you include him, it goes up by one.
Yeah.
He just, every single player has been so impressive, so focused, and this Jazz game was the perfect microcosm of the season.
Mm-hmm.
It starts out within 95 seconds. Powell and OG collide. You think they're both going to leave the game. OG later on gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like he hurt his foot. It looks like it's just a disaster of a game. McCaw and Hollis Jefferson share the floor, which is never a great sign. The Jazz come back in the second quarter, and it just looks like it's going to be a bad game. People get injured. Raptors lose, mm-hmm. you know.
Last game of the road trip, whatever, it's fine. Whatever. Yeah, whatever.
And then, you know, the end of the second, they put it together when the starters come back in. The third, they make a huge run with the starters, and then Nick Nurse mixes up the rotations, limits the McCaw, Hollis, Jefferson minutes together. Separately, mm-hmm. they still play, and they're quite good when they're separate, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And the Raptors pull out this unbelievable win. I mean, it looks like it won't be fun in the game or in the season, you know, Kawhi leaves.
Yeah.
But it ends up being just devilishly wonderful.
Yeah, like you can kind of get the sense with this team, too, when a game is going to be like that. Like, I think I tweeted, like, 3 minutes after... I think, like 3 minutes after the injury went down. Like, Kyle seemed to kind of, like, take it over for a second and was like, oh, okay, Kyle's driving the bus in this game and no one is going to stop him or take the wheel away from him. And I was like, there's a very good chance here that something special is going to happen. It kind of felt like that Lakers game a little bit, right? Where it was like, you know, this sort of building, like, inspiration that seemed to be ready to explode at some point. And, like, that's the beauty of this team is when you can pick up on that happening and then they pull through with it. It's... I don't know, man. This has been, I think, Carter Rodriguez, friend of the show, from the Chase Down podcast, sort of asked the question to Raptors fans last night, like, is this more fun than last year? And look, nothing's ever going to top the playoff run because of all the moments that came in that and just the crazy, you know, the ups and downs and the winning of the actual title and seeing everything kind of coronated and everything, but last year's regular season was stressful, and there was a lot of sort of what-ifs about it, and it was not cohesive, and there was the whole load management thing that people got mad about for some reason, and it was just like a really... I don't want to say it was not fun, because there was a lot of fun elements to it. The whole will-he-won't-he thing, while it was stressful, was also a thing that kind of enriched the season a little bit and made it fun to sort of follow and, you know, dissect every single Kawhi word. But this season, there's no expectation. The injuries have even added to the lack of expectation. And the fact that they're just, like, blowing it out of the water every single night is... I'm never going to forget this season. It's, like, some of the wins this year are, like, all-time Raptors wins. I can't say enough about this team, man. They're undeniably one of the greatest stories of the last 5 years in the NBA. Like, that's what it is.
We set out to slander Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, it's too hard. I can't be punching people when I'm so happy myself.
All we've done is just talk about how wonderful the Raptors are. It's, you know, truly We set out to be pessimistic towards us and towards others. Ended up optimistic. What a wonderful life lesson.
I know. I can't even be mad about Rudy Gobert being mad about getting ejected. Like, he probably shouldn't have been ejected. Like, fair enough. OG, like, the swinging elbows. Yeah. And, like, I thought Rudy Gobert should have gotten a tech at some point. Yeah. When he was having his little temper tantrums after not getting the foul calls he wanted. And that was a whole other thing. But that was a very OG created thing, I think. And it was very funny to me. My favorite part of the whole thing was OG just like assuming he was being ejected. He was like, I'm out, right? Yeah, I'm gone. Yeah, okay, I'm gone.
This way, that way, yeah. Which is the door.
And then Gobert almost like sort of going back to the floor as though he was like trying to just be, he was in full denial that he had been ejected. And then when the refs were trying to explain it to him, it was like, I'll only speak French. Sorry, what? I don't know what you're saying to me. And what? Yeah. And so, you know, that was a funny little thing. And, you know, I can't be mad at Rudy Gobert. Whatever. He had a very sort of, you know, like he had a very hateable game. He was like throwing his body around. He seemed to knock up Serge a little bit. And I'm hoping Serge's knee is okay because it seemed like he was kind of fighting through some stuff late in that game. And kudos to him for sticking it out. But I really can't be mad about any of what went down with Rudy Gobert because he's the one with the team that lost in a very embarrassing fashion.
It's like the Mad Men scene, you know, where Pete Campbell says, you know, you disgust me. And Don Draper says, you know, I don't think about you at all.
Yeah.
Right? The Jazz just don't register.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was an OG Anunoby instigated event. But if you take Rudy Gobert's game in totality, it was kind of pathetic.
Yeah.
It was a childish performance, both physically and emotionally. All the tantrums, the jumping up and down, the holding his head in frustration.
Yeah.
And I know it's, you know, ironic that I say that because Kyle Lowry is certainly known to be demonstrative. But Lowry wins.
Yeah.
Lowry does that and scores 30 and wins.
And is usually right.
And is right. Yeah. Rudy Gobert did not win, did not play a good game, and really let it get to him.
Yeah.
You know, if you back up your behavior with your game, then it's acceptable. Like Chris Paul.
Yeah.
You know, you hate him, but damn, you respect him.
I couldn't possibly hate Chris Paul. He's beautiful. He's Kyle Lowry incarnate.
Exactly.
It's wonderful.
And it's so hard to respect that performance from Gobert because, you know, it was truly, they were in his head. OG was in his head. The Raptors used to be the team where people get in their heads.
Yeah.
And now they get in opponents' heads.
It's so great watching that and just sort of seeing how unafraid the Raptors are of every team they come across. And you're right, like the totals flip on its head from like 2 or 3 years ago. And
who's gonna punk this team?
I know, right? Like,
they're not scared of the Bucks. They're not scared of the Clippers.
They might lose to the Bucks.
Yeah.
Like they might lose to them just based on talent and Giannis being ridiculous, but they're certainly not gonna have like a LeBron experience where it's like, oh, LeBron is completely consuming our existence. We missed those tip-ins in game one and we're talking about it before game four and getting swept. Like that's not gonna happen with this team, and that is so refreshing. And again, part of just like the joy of this season is just like they're a bunch of motherfuckers, man. In the best possible way. And they're just like hardened by the title run, and it's just made them impossibly likable. Any last thoughts on this game? We should probably talk about the bench a little bit. Terrence Davis once again gets one shift. He doesn't perform very well and gets benched for the rest of the night. Not great for the Terrence Davis should be the eighth guy in the playoffs faction of Raptors internet, which I'm probably part of. It's not looking good for him right now. Hopefully coming home, some home cooking can kind of help him get back on track. But Matt Thomas and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson in particular, we talked to Pat McCaw a little bit. I mean, Pat McCaw is Pat McCaw, whatever. But Rondae Hollis-Jefferson last night, A, had like the most entertaining possession in the history of basketball when he missed his own shot like four times, got his own rebound a couple times, and then somehow walked into a bucket despite having the ball in his hands for like 38 consecutive seconds.
Missed two uncontested layups.
Yeah.
Got both rebounds. And he wasn't even happy or mad after. He was just confused walking down the floor like, what did I do?
Truly delightful stuff. They had a lot of Rondae with the ball in his hands. Not great, but I guess it's kind of their way of keeping space on the floor.
He must lead the team in touches. It's kind of crazy.
They really abandoned all of that makes them the Raptors when he's out there.
Every time he's in, he's like, he demands the ball on the block. They give it to him and just don't run an action for it. It's quite weird.
Just like, okay, let chaos happen. We'll see. Maybe the ball will go in at some point.
Entropy.
Yeah. But then Matt Thomas, we should probably talk about him a little bit. He's been in the doghouse lately. I have not particularly enjoyed his work lately. He's been tentative. He's been almost scared to shoot. He's gotten his three blocked a couple times because I think he's kind of second-guessed himself before shooting. Not so last night. I think the fact that he only hit one three last night, only attempted two of his seven shots, was kind of refreshing. It didn't feel like all of his offense was based on threes. He was doing the thing where he runs off the line and hitting those little sort of leaning jumpers. He cut a couple times beautifully, missed one layup from Kyle, but had a couple nice cuts, the great chemistry with Kyle Lowry, and shocking, Kyle Lowry making a bench guy look good. as I mentioned last night, Kyle Lowry's entire career is in the interest of making remembering some guys in 10 years a fun experience for Raptors fans. Matt Thomas will be one of those guys I'm sure you remember because of Kyle Lowry. What did you think of Thomas? Do you think he like moved up in your power rankings of bench guys with one night? It really does feel like night to night. It's just like a constantly moving wheel of trust with those guys that are making up like 8 through 12.
I don't think he should necessarily have... I don't think the team should have a different perspective of his role. But just Terrence and Chris Boucher as well did not have it going. Little concerning that Terrence Davis is... the slump has been the longest of his young career.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely played like a rookie. Last night was not a good game from him.
Mm-hmm.
And 5.5 minutes, you know, not so big a deal. The team lost it by 15 points, not great. You can move past 5.5 minutes and try someone else. And they moved to Matt Thomas. He was next up, and he really performed. The team will always have someone who can pick up that slack.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as you say, you know, it wasn't just the threes. He took a lot of one-dribble pull-ups. He was great at those, couple cuts. The possession where he got into the paint, waited, jumped, hung, lefty layup was the most impressive of the game for him. His rebounding has been refreshing.
It's ridiculous.
he finds ways to contribute beyond shooting, which is clearly, he knows what his reputation is.
Mm-hmm.
He knows it's not enough to get him on the NBA court,
mm-hmm.
and he has to find other ways to contribute. He's good at that.
Yeah, he had one rebound last night that was Terry Ross-esque, just like flying in from nowhere.
Yeah.
It wasn't terribly contested, but it was a big, fancy-looking one. And he had sort of a clinching one late in the game, too, where it wasn't really a traditional go-up, box-out, get the rebound. It was like a fight for the loose ball that he ended up coming up with, too. He's been great on the rebounding side of things. It's been shocking, but it's been really fun.
I think Matt Thomas is firmly on the J.J. Redick trajectory. And I know it's kind of an easy comparison.
Yeah.
But it's also the most obvious one.
Yeah.
Just because J.J. Redick was not good enough to just be a shooter.
Yeah.
He became a very good team defender. Not quite as great a rebounder, but, you know, really good at the one dribble shooting. Super underrated passer, screen setter, cutter. Matt Thomas isn't there in any of those ways yet.
No.
You know, he's clearly not as good as J.J. Redick, who's a wonderful player.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's building along the edges in a similar way. And so the peak, the ceiling of that career looks something like what J.J. Redick is. And he won't get there this year by any means.
Yeah. Just
probably not ever.
Yeah.
But it's encouraging that he's extending out the tendrils of some other skills. And we saw that last night.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to, you know, swing a playoff game or anything like that.
No.
He might have a stretch where he comes in for 3 minutes and hits two threes and it's like, oh, there's the bench offense. Like, that might swing one of those stretches where the bench can't score.
Might swing a stretch of a game.
Exactly. And, like, I don't think he's going to factor much into the playoff rotation, but like, I feel like he'd kind of be like the Jody Meeks type of thing, where he's a better shooter, but like, you know, he'll come in and play a couple minutes at the end of a quarter if they need some shooting and they want to sort of stem the tide a little bit and their offense is sputtering. But nice to see him have a nice game, and nice to see the Raptors get 4 days off, because they have to be absolutely beat from this road trip. And I mean, I could talk about them all day, but we should probably wrap up. You're in Hamilton to go cover some cool news for the Canadian Elite Basketball League, which people should keep an eye out for. It's probably going to drop not long after this podcast posts. It's going to be cool, and there's going to be some Raptors involvement. I can just tell you that. So, like, tangential Raptors involvement. But assuming things in the playoffs go as they are planned to go. But that's all I'll tease.
Yeah, that's more than I know. I will be there to cover it. Actually, I'll be covering the CEBL all year.
Hell yeah.
In varying, you know, to be determined amounts of coverage, but certainly some. So really excited to go figure out what it is Sean is teasing.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Lewis, do you have anything you want to plug?
Yeah, the Norm piece. I mean, sure, he'll be out. Hopefully not for long. You can find it at my Twitter. Just my name, Lewis Zatzman, L-O-U-I-S-Z-A-T-Z-M-A-N, at Twitter. Norm becoming a superstar, really fun story, will not be at all, you know, stopped by his injury, just delayed, just like all of his other injuries. He is turning into something Toronto dramatically needed. Think of the season, whatever they need, they find on the roster. So, Sean, thank you so much for having me. As always,
no problem,
man,
buddy.
Such a pleasure to be here to see your place.
Thanks, buddy. You can find me at Woodley Sean. You can go to Raptors.com to find my work this month. I wrote a piece for the 905 as well, talking about the women of the Raptors 905.
Great
you
piece.
Can thanks, man. You can go check that out. Also, my John Thomas piece, where I spoke to former Raptors journeyman Big John Thomas about his time with Toronto and how he was my first basketball love. You can go find that. And lots of good stuff coming over the next couple weeks as well. Some extremely Sean shit, too, so keep an eye out. That's going to do it. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please make sure now to tell your smart device to go listen to Locked On Leafs to hear about that tire fire of a team. And we will talk to you next time with another episode of Locked On Raptors.